Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. I'm Gwen Berry. I'm down in South Florida, and I'm one of your hosts. Our other host is a guest co-host. His name is Joe McAvoy, and he is the publisher, editor, and poster, and promoter, and also does the wonderful videos, news videos for Worldwide Hippies and Citizens Journalist Exchange. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, I'm glad to have you. And we've scheduled two guests today. Our first guest and our friend who's returning is Julia Trigg Crawford from it's Direct Texas, right?
Well, down here we say direct.
Direct. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what?
Hi, Gwen. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Hi, Julia. What is the name of your ranch?
It's called Red Ark Farm. R-E-D apostrophe A-R-C. That's because the Red River and the Bodark Creeks meet at our farm.
That's wild. That's wonderful. Before we get into our show and begin to discuss this very important topic, I just wanted to make one statement for the Here Be Monsters sort of satellites here and radio shows, and that is that we just want to promote the idea of peace, no war, keep our people home, take care of our vets here, and allow the world to heal itself and look for better answers than war, than any kind of violence. And that's the only statement I wanted to make, but I wanted to make it today. So I guess we're ready. I'm going to allow Joe to begin talking with you, Julia, and asking you some direct questions.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Hi, Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Joe.
You there?
I'm here.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
For the million-plus listeners that we have right now who aren't familiar with your name, should be, but aren't, can you give us a little background on who you are and what brings you to There Be Monsters tonight?
Absolutely, and I'm glad to be back on. I think Gwen had me on early in my fight. I'm a third-generation farmer in northeast Texas, right on the banks of the Red River. Our family has about a 650-acre farm that my grandfather bought in 1948. And I'm looking out the windows right now at the soybeans, and we just harvested corn last week. The other crop we farm here is wheat. But it's a beautiful place, and we've worked hard to take care of it. And about 5 years ago, TransCanada showed up and wanted permission to put their pipeline across it. And we told them no, that we didn't want them, just like we told every other pipeline that's come our way. The other pipelines heeded our request and found other routes through our neighbor's land, but TransCanada said, no, we're coming across. And in 2011, sent a letter that said, if you don't give us permission, we're going to take it anyway. So that's about 2.5 acres, about 2 acres of our land was condemned by the local judge. That's the process whereby a pipeline can take it. And that took place in 2000 and, God, seems like 100 years ago, 11. And we appealed the condemnation of our land, saying that TransCanada, a foreign corporation, doesn't have the right to take our land for this Keystone XL project. And we've now been to court twice, and we've lost both times. But undeterred, we're going to appeal next week to the Texas Supreme Court, saying that we don't believe they have the right to take it.
So your farm is a producing farm. We're not talking like, you know, just a gentleman's farm. This is
this place is, it's wheat, corn, and soybeans, and we have those under irrigation. We actually have water rights to Bodark Creek, the nearby creek. And then we have a small herd of cattle. My dad's a retired veterinarian, so of course we've got cattle. But no, this is a working farm. I just got off the tractor 2 hours ago, in fact.
Now, you said you're going to appeal the latest. Was it a denial? Were you asking them to stop, or were you asking them, you know, not to come through at all, or temporary?
Well, that's what's kind of crazy, Joe. We have said that we don't believe TransCanada qualifies as a common carrier in Texas. A common carrier is a pipeline that allows everybody that wants to get on the pipeline to put their, you know, their products in the pipeline. We don't believe by Texas law they qualify. But so we said they shouldn't have a right to take our land. So the lower court, the little judge in Lamar County, Texas, who was the guy who condemned our land, after months in court and thousands of pages of documents, he ruled that TransCanada did have a right to take our land. And what's interesting, Joe, is he sent that ruling as a 15-word email from his iPhone and then refused to provide us any other information.
Now, that seems like you have some recourse right there, but also just to back up a little bit, now for them to condemn your land, don't they have to have like some stated reason for condemning it? I mean, are they saying we're condemning this because we want to take it and we want to give it to this big corporation, or do they come up with something like, you know, gee, you're too close to the river or whatever?
No, that's what's kind of weird. The process of taking land through eminent domain, at least in Texas, is a process of condemnation. They basically say to the courts that they have more of a right and use to the land than I do as a landowner because it's going to benefit the public. And it is just a rubber stamp.
It is an absolute
rubber stamp.
Condemning land isn't like, you know, when people think of something being condemned or thinking of there being something wrong with it or being run down. But actually, this is just a word game to say if a large corporation anywhere in the world wants to have access to your property, these courts are saying they have that right.
Well, and that's what we've been pushing back on. Eminent domain as a vehicle to take land that's for the public good is not a bad thing. I mean, if this was a hospital being built or a highway that needed to, you know, be built or bringing water to a community, that'd be different. But as far as we know, and even President Obama a few weeks ago said, you know, this is probably, you know, a product that's just passing through the states and it's going to be exported.
Well, and for the people listening, what we're talking about here isn't like, you know, beautiful, you know, nice clean oil coming down through a pipeline. What we're talking about basically is sludge that'll never make it to a gasoline stage, that is probably going to be all diesel fuel sent to China, and that it's not going to be any here in the States, just like you had said. So where eminent domain comes in is for the common good, but there's no common good if, first of all, it's not oil that's coming through there. It's basically just sludge. It's some of the filthiest stuff that you can get. You can't run anything else with it. The pipeline will have to be exclusive for that. And it's not, as you had said, going anywhere in the United States. So to me, and I'm not a lawyer, but to me, I don't see where the common good is coming in here. Are they saying, well, it's going to give jobs? Or?
They trot out the company line that they're creating, you know, sometimes I've heard some of our state representatives say hundreds of thousands of jobs and helping create energy independence.
Yeah,
and that's what's just ridiculous, is these grossly inflated numbers.
There's facts to back up that's not true. And I have to point out here that I noticed, too, the silence on the mainstream corporate media, too. We know, Gwen and I and yourself and others listening, I'm sure, about where this oil's coming from, all of these little special rules that are being broken for these large corporations. We know that, but it's not getting out there. It seems to get dismissed by the corporate media, so people they're just not really aware of what's going on. I think if you talk to just like an average person, they think it's clean oil coming down through, they're going to be turned into gasoline.
No, it's not your mom's everyday crude oil. And in Texas, we know a lot about oil. I mean, this state was built on oil. So part of the problem is when TransCanada came to landowners like us or the other people in our county, they put in front of them a piece of paper that says, we'd like to get an easement across your land to build a 36-inch pipeline that's going to transport crude petroleum, oil, or oil byproducts. They didn't tell anybody it's called diluted bitumen. They didn't tell anybody, should this get in your waterway, it sinks. They didn't tell anybody the temperature of the pipe can be 150 degrees because of the friction of this peanut butter-like substance. So a lot of people sign these easements with little information.
Yeah, it moves very slow through the pipeline, and it's full of, the sludge itself is so viscous that it does. It actually creates a scenario where the fights heat up. And as far as just back to touch on that jobs issue, the information is out there on the web. If anybody, just Google it, and you will see that there are no real jobs. There's going to be some part-time jobs coming through to build the pipeline. But actually, jobs will be lost. My research shows that there will be over 20,000 jobs lost just to truck drivers who are trucking it down right now from Nebraska. And the oil companies, if you don't have to pay somebody to drive it down there, you not only have to, you don't have to pay them, but you don't have to pay the insurance on the vehicle or the upkeep of the vehicle, and these people will be out of work. So when they say that it's going to create jobs, from my research, it's not going to create many. They won't be long-term, and in the meantime, they will be taking jobs away, because right now, the oil is getting down to the refineries by truck. I'm not sure everyone is aware of that.
Well, and, you know, and this is actually, and here's another thing people need to realize. When we're talking about this Keystone XL pipeline, Joe, the XL part of it is coming across the border. And that's the part that needs the presidential permit. When President Obama denied the presidential permit last year, TransCanada went to Plan B, and they just uncoupled the Oklahoma-Texas leg and started building it as fast as they could. They didn't need the same permit. So when we talk about stopping the Keystone XL, they've already built the Oklahoma-Texas leg. In fact, as we were in court arguing that TransCanada did not have the right to take our land, TransCanada had already moved forward on the construction of my land, and we're almost finished. So they didn't want to wait till the courts said anything. You know, the courts did rule in their favor, but I'm appealing to the Texas Supreme Court because the Texas Supreme Court has made some very bold and brave and courageous rulings holding up property rights for individuals so that it's a slam dunk.
Has your dealings to this point been kind of like just on a local level?
Involvement?
No. The courts.
Well, it was the local court here in the county, and then when we appealed it to the 6th District, that's an appellate court that was multiple counties. I mean, it's the first judge was the Lamar County Court at Law judge, who started one of our hearings by saying, quote, "I never want to hear the word pipeline again," close quotes.
Right.
So it went from someone like that who emailed his 15-word ruling to a panel of 3 judges. You know, I was pleased with what appeared to be 3 experienced judges who'd done their homework and asked some tough questions. In the end, they ruled against us. But, you know,
their ruling is based on it's going to be doing so much good.
Well, their ruling was that by Texas, you know, even though it's a rubber stamp system in Texas by the Railroad Commission, that's the governing body for pipelines, that even though it's a rubber stamp, they do qualify. So the runaround I'm getting is the courts are, and even in the judge's ruling, most recent appellate ruling, the judges say, my recourse is in the judicial system. I'm going to have to get the laws changed. So then I go to Austin, our state capital, and I testified, and a couple of really good bills came up before the legislature that would more balance the weight of a landowner's rights against a company's rights. And guess what? The oil lobby in Texas made sure those bills didn't get through committee. So the legislature is saying, well, you need to just go back and go through the court system. The courts, you know, so it's like nobody wants to stand up for an individual's property rights in Texas because they're so afraid of big oil's power.
Right.
It's outrageous.
And they do have the power. I mean,
they got the biggest hammer. Yeah, they do. They're the gorilla.
Just before the show started, we were talking a little bit with Julia, and you were telling us about how you're kind of like under 24/7 watch around your own property, aren't you?
No, it's ridiculous. In April, we had a big benefit concert here in April to raise money for our legal defense fund, because I'm fighting this this legal battle with money that people are sending me. I'm a farmer, but we don't have a lot of money. So I've been absolutely humbled and overwhelmed by donations from around the world. And in fact, if anybody wants to learn more about our fight or find a way to make a donation, can I give you all my website?
Sure.
It's standtallwithjulia.com. and I have a blog there. We took our concert website and kind of turned it into a blogging and donation website. But kind of back to the story, in April after our concert, suddenly there was there were cars parked across the highway from me, which is, you know, right across the road from my property. And they were off-duty policemen, off-duty constables, off-duty sheriff's officers who'd been hired by TransCanada on 12-hour shifts, 24/7, and these guys were all armed, to watch my property. So when I went over and introduced myself, I said, "What are you guys watching?" And they said, "Well, we're here to watch the equipment." But the thing is, you guys, there was no equipment. For 2 weeks, there was no equipment, and these guys were across the road. So when equipment did show up, security got doubled to two people at a time, armed guards, and they had a camera, so they would videotape me as I'm walking around. And then TransCanada sent a videographer and a still photographer, and as I walked on my property, on the side of the fence, it's my property, they were filming me, popping up from behind equipment and setting up their video cameras. Now, they were on the easement of the land that TransCanada has taken from me, but what right did they have to film me and my dogs as I'm walking on my property or riding my bike down the road? It was unbelievable. And they're still there.
Julia, I mean,
it's an invasion of privacy.
Do you feel personally like that, you know, there could be some danger in you doing this, and what, how does your family feel about this? Because it just seems that when it comes to this pipeline, it's much more than just the pipeline. It's kind of like who's going to make the decisions, what goes on in this country, and if anybody gets in the way, I don't see where they have limits. And I want to speak for you. Do you feel, you know, for your own safety?
You know, I don't. I mean, I'm a little bit of a Pollyanna, though, Joe, and I've had people say, you know, you live here by yourself, you know, there are guys across the road, there's helicopters that fly over that are TransCanada helicopters, and kind of interesting, they don't necessarily always fly over the pipeline route, they fly over my house. But I'm not afraid, you know, surveillance, sure, you know, who knows about what they're watching and listening. But this, and you asked about my family, this was a decision that wasn't just mine. I'm the farm manager, and I went to my family, my dad and my sister and my brother, and I said, I believe that we need to fight this because the way TransCanada was able to check a box on a form and get the power of eminent domain is wrong. So we're as much standing up for our farm as we are shining a light on the issues.
Well,
so,
and that's wonderful. I mean, and your whole family, too. And it just shows that, again, family, whatever your family may be, I mean, you get the support from them. You can go anywhere. You can do anything. And
absolutely right.
I think you're showing that, Julia. And again, you say you're not afraid for your safety, and I believe you. But I'm not sure that if I was in that position, that I wouldn't be a little bit worried about all the tactics they've used, and do they have limits? And I'm not trying to scare you. I'm just, actually, I admire.
Oh, Joe, it's not something I haven't thought about.
Right.
But I have got to believe that, and you know, and my beef isn't necessarily with these off-duty policemen or hired, or my beef isn't necessarily with the guys out here that were on tractors and backhoes digging up my land and destroying my property. I've actually had a chance to talk to some of them, and they're actually pretty decent guys. And they kind of they will say, "I support you, but I'm here to make a living." So my beef is with TransCanada, and it's greed chasing easy gains. And I'm making it as hard as I can. And our family believes that by staying in this fight long enough, and that's as far as we can go, and until the money runs out, that we're helping elevate the dialogue and elevate the issues. I've testified at our state capitol. I've flown to Washington to testify to Congress. I have been to the Forward on Climate rally in D.C. I use our story in every forum, like on, you know, Here Be Monsters or anywhere I can, to help educate people, because once you kind of hear the truth, it's hard to just to keep drinking that Kool-Aid.
It is. You're doing a great job, Julia. You're doing a tremendous job. I think of you often, and every time I see, especially when I see also Sheree Foytlin out there. She's still hanging in and doing her
best. Oh, she's fabulous. I'm a big supporter of hers, and she's actually been by my house and spent the night with me. So, I mean, she's walking places. She's amazing.
I can't tell you how much I admire both of you. You both women who have come out and put yourselves into the direct path between what's right and what's wrong, especially for the environment, but mostly for the community, and to awaken people right now. And this is what we need.
Well, and I've taken this opportunity. You know, coloring inside the lines, as I say it, by fighting them in the courts.
Right.
But if the courts are going to deny me and other landowners any ability to seek justice, then you know what? We got to find another way. So about 2 months ago, I gathered anybody I knew that was in a position of authority in different organizations, and I said, listen, we've got to find a way that we're stronger together. So we have this whole new energy in other ways, obviously nonviolent, but we got to get laws changed, we got to get better representatives elected, and we've got to get information out to the public. So we're starting to organize public hearings along the path of not only the Keystone XL, but the Seaway and the Pegasus. You know,
yeah.
What's sad is, you know, this product is leaking in Mayflower, Arkansas. And I was just in Kalamazoo, Michigan about 3 weeks ago to see where it leaked in that river 3 years ago. And I stuck my boot in the sand and oil came up on a river they're saying is clean. I have pictures. I mean, I reached down in the dirt and it's shiny. So, you know, I'm trying to protect my water. So my fight is not just environment. I'm concerned about my water, my land, the Caddo Indian artifacts. They found 145 artifacts in the path of the pipeline, but they said it was okay to chew them up.
You're fighting for
property rights. The story is just, you know, our farm was kind of this ground zero. They horizontally drilled this pipeline under the creek where I have water rights. And we all know it's just a matter of time until pipelines leak. Well, if there should be any compromised pipe in the creek, I'm going to lose my ability to irrigate 400 acres of farm. We have Caddo Indian artifacts. The fight actually started when TransCanada said they found a part of our property that they didn't find any artifacts, and we pick them up every day. So as it turns out, when TransCanada ponied up the money for an archaeological survey, they found 145 artifacts directly in the path of the pipeline. But the Texas Historical Commission's executive director said it was okay for them to go ahead. You know, everywhere I turn, it's like, just, you know, be quiet, little girl. And I'm 6 feet tall, so you don't call me a little girl anyway. But, you know, somebody's got to stand up and start, you know, just saying, I'm not going to be quiet, and I'm going to help expose this system that's bad, and we're doing that.
Well,
It may just be the ripple, but someone else is going to pick up where I leave off, and it's going to be a wave by the time they're done.
Well, it seems like you're setting the path for that. You know, you have to start at the local level, you know, get on these small boards and stuff, because that's, well, just from your story, just what you were saying, the small, right, you know, it's your local court, it's your local, you know, councils and all that are putting up blocks in the way to begin with. Well, that's a good place to start and get your people who care about their environment on those boards and running the courts and start at the base level, which is what you're doing. And that's the example that, you know, people need to follow. You don't have to change the whole world, but boy, you can change the world just by going outside your own front door. And what you're doing is just the perfect way to do it, in my opinion.
Julia,
well, it's all I know to do because I've never been a political person. I guess I'm officially an activist. I was arrested in Washington 2 years ago. God, I guess, yeah, right at 2 years ago in front of the White House, you know.
Right.
And I'm learning being an activist isn't a bad word. It just means you're passionate about something. And I'm not taking any totally radical positions. And I think just kind of being an average person, explaining to people how the system works, how easily someone can take your land, people are waking up. They really are.
You know, Julia, average people getting upset and becoming active about issues and bad laws and taking action, well, that's rebellion, you know? And rebellion is how we got here, in the good sense, in the good
yeah.
way. And
well, I think
it takes that kind of leadership.
Well, I think I told you the first time we met, Gwen, on the phone, is that I was a Girl Scout and a cheerleader and the firstborn child, so I never wanted to rock the boat. I didn't color outside the lines. But I am now a little bit, and even in the court documents, in one of the transcripts, TransCanada's attorney said, well, Your Honor, she's an activist.
Uh-huh.
Why does that even matter? You know what? TransCanada turned me into an activist. If they want to point the finger, they're the ones that made me this activist. Now, I was always competitive before. I was a college athlete. Our family is very competitive. So part of this drive is that competitive fire. And part of staying in this game, because people have sent me letters. I've gotten 5 pieces of hate mail and a couple thousand support letters. And by and large, the hate mail say you should have just taken the money. I mean, the TransCanada's final offer was $21,000 for a one-time easement, for a one-time payment for a forever easement across our farm. Well, $21,000 is over the farm's 60 years old now. I want to make sure it's around 160 years. That's nothing. That's nothing.
Right.
Well, and I'm sure the money isn't really the point anyway.
It absolutely isn't. It is not the money. In fact,
three generations on this farm. I don't think you are go anywhere soon.
Julia, I was wondering, are you still working with the same attorney, or have you had to shift those gears around?
I shift the gears, and I brought on a fabulous young woman who's an environmental attorney. She came on board, I guess it was about a year ago. Was it a year ago? Yeah, it was last May. Her name is Wendy Hammond. And,
uh-huh.
You know, between the two of us, we represent two women that are standing up to what look to be David and Goliath kind of odds. I mean, we make an interesting pair. I'm 6 feet tall, with barefooted. She's a little tiny sprite of a person, but she's a fireball, and I want her in my camp no matter the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're learning. There's no dissing you, Joe, but a lot of the leaders in some of these battles are women.
They
and
are.
I don't know why. I do not know why.
I think that's a great thing. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think it should be pointed out more, too. Thanks for pointing it out.
Well, there's the nuns in Kentucky, and there's Sharif Voigtlin, and there's myself, and there's Jane Klebb of Bold, Nebraska. There's, by and large, the women who are representing the First Nations in Canada are women. It's like the men in the black suits of TransCanada versus the women in boots, of the Heartland.
The Rainforest Action Network is a lot of women also.
Absolutely. I think their president is a woman.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's called the grounding of the goddess. The goddess is coming home. Take care of the planet.
Well, I don't know what the definition is, but I just know that I've met some amazing people, and it's almost like every time we get together, we lament the fact that we've met because we're fighting this monster. But these amazing friendships and connections are being made. And we may not all agree on the tactics being used. You know, there's all different ways that people are trying to stop this pipeline. And anybody that's got passion enough to get in the game, I admire them. I'm doing it the way that I thought and still believe that we had the best chance of winning, and that is legally fighting the eminent domain process. And Joe had said earlier, changing our representation at the local level is important. Well, I'm going to try to change it from the local level all the way to, our representatives in Congress. I mean, it's unfortunate that the people that are in office to represent us are choosing to just turn their heads when the landowners are crying for help, and instead vote the way that big oil wants them to vote.
Now, do you think that's if there's political money behind that. I mean, I don't think that, this, my opinion is, the others don't turn their head for the sake of turning their head. There's reasons why they're doing it. Do you think that these oil companies, and to some point the question is rhetorical, actually, that the oil companies are contributing more to those that are in positions to affect those decisions? Or do you think...
Well, it could be. I can't say that a judge rules the way he does because of the money, but there's huge political pressures. And I'm not a political person, guys, but I am learning that just in the Republican Party alone, they're pretty split. They've got the people that are Republicans that purport they're for big oil, and Republicans also purport they're for property rights. And in Texas, there's a tough line right there. Where are you? Where do you sit on this fence? But
right.
I think it's actually been a blessing that I'm not a political person, because I'm just, this is about right and wrong to me, and I don't care what color you are, what political party you are. You know, the people that come to my hearings and the people that send me money, I think are just this unbelievable kaleidoscope of people, and they all believe in property rights. And I bet thousands of donations from around the world, and I save, and this is where it just becomes incredibly humbling, I'm saving every card, every letter, every post-it note, every check that has something written in the memo, and I have three binders now of people from around the world saying, one guy was a soldier in Germany who said, "You're fighting for all of us, thank you." Or an out-of-work carpenter in Brooklyn who says, "I don't have anything to spend, but if you're ever in Brooklyn, I'll buy you a beer and tell you I thank you for what you're doing." So this fight is no longer just for the 2 acres that they're taking from my land. This fight is people saying we've had enough. We've had enough.
If this gets resolved and, win or lose on your property, do you think that your activism will continue and grow towards, the environment more as a whole and once the pipeline issue is settled?
Well, I don't know if this pipeline issue is ever going to be settled. I think I think now that I've got this activist fire, I think I'll always be passionate about something, because somewhere down the road, there's going to be another family needing help. So I'm only here because people stepped up and kind of shepherded me along this route. And I owe that to somebody else. It may be environmental. It may be other kinds of rights. I'm just, sadly, this veil is pulling away from me, and I'm seeing all these wrongs, And I feel like I've, not just me, but I feel like the American people are just being abandoned on all kinds of fronts. Just abandoned.
And to hear people ringing the bell, and obviously you've heard the bell, and once you hear it, you can't unring it.
That's very true.
So you just ring it so others can hear it, and don't stop, because you're all surprised to it. You think nobody's listening, and then you just tell just what you had said about the cards and stuff. I never even thought of that. And it's like from all over, and these little voices here, dollar here, dollar there, little pat on the fanny here, pat on the fanny there. This stuff is, this helps your brothers and sisters keep going. And I know myself, just hearing you say that, it's even more encouraging for me to do more than I'm doing, because it's an important thing. We're talking about the planet.
Absolutely. It started off just our little piece of the planet, the Crawford
Stewardship.
Farm here.
It's stewardship.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's steward. I think that's why so many people will reach out to you and continue to do so, because they see that you are being a good steward. And they feel themselves, there's a lot of folks that are traditionally, there's everything right with being a conservative when you're conserving the land and the resources and the rights of people to make them whole and keep them healthy. That's the kind of conservative my mother was,
Well, and I only came into this job as a farm manager about 3.5 years ago. It was time for my dad to turn over the reins, and I'm the oldest child, and it made the most sense for me. I'd never run the farm before, but we'd been here as kids. We never actually grew up here. This is where our grandparents live, but we lived all over the country at different universities growing up. But so when I came here 3.5 years ago, My plan as a good steward of the land, that was exactly what I was going to do, was to find ways to make this land more productive and more sustainable and look at maybe changing some of the crops out. But then my dad handed me a folder, and it said, Keystone. He goes, oh, by the way, there's a pipeline that wants to come across here. You're going to need to take care of this. Well, little did I know, you know, what that would entail. But you know what? Timing is everything. Timing is everything. If I had stepped into this role 6 months later, my dad probably would have signed because he hadn't really done his homework, and this would have it would have been, you know, a fait accompli by the time I got here. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons we're on this planet, and this may have been the reason I came to the farm. Who knows?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot to what you just said. Everything, as a matter of fact. I wanted to ask you, what is the status of your land and the pipeline right now?
Oh, well, that's what's crazy. TransCanada went ahead and began construction even while we were appealing the lower court's ruling. So they're pretty much done. The pipe was... You know, they dug the hole, they brought the pipes in, you know, it was just like hustle and bustle. There was in a 4,000-foot horizontal drill. They basically drilled a pipe. I mean, they drilled a tunnel and then had to pull this pipe through it. That was very complicated. They finished that about a month ago. Today they took out the last piece of heavy equipment off my property. They're still going to have to come back and put the topsoil back on and then... You know, that's a big hay pasture, so it's going to be probably a 2-year process to resprig it and get it going. But here, pretty quick, they're done with the construction. Now it's just like the landscaping. And you know, all along TransCanada, in trying to counter my fight, they've been saying, well, you know, 18 months after it's done, you won't even know we were there. You know, the grass will have grown back, and you won't even know we were there except for the little signs they have to put out there. But you know, my pushback is, well, that's like telling someone who's been violated or assaulted that 18 months after that assault, that after everything heals up and they're back at work, that they won't think about it. They won't know that it happened. It's, you know, this is, they took something that I told them I didn't want them to take. And those scars are there forever, even if the physical scars of the land are gone.
You know, Julia, I watched a video of you speaking about eminent domain and other. Are you doing a lot of this public speaking and bringing people's awareness up about eminent domain and the different sides of it?
Well, I'm sure trying. I mean, I've done some, you know, speaking as a invited, you know, testimony in Austin. But, you know, I was recently up in Kalamazoo, and I spoke at the Occupy National Gathering and enlightened them on eminent domain. I'm going to my home, College Station, Texas, to speak there to, you know, a high school friend who's part of a group called the Brazos Progressives and share it with them. But, you know, I'm not standing on the street corner preaching, but I'm taking anybody up on an offer to talk to them. Even if it's one-on-one, right. I wear my no Keystone XL button when I'm traveling, and, you know, it starts a conversation. It's all about becoming enlightened. And one person, I'm not hitting people over the head with a hammer. I'm just sharing with them the story. And once you hear the story and how the process works, most everybody who's got an open mind and an open heart will change, will be a little bit more sympathetic.
Well, and they'll know a lot more. A lot of people don't understand really what the nuts and bolts of these arguments are. They see, you know, some of those more fantastic stories like the gorilla environmentalists that are down there in your territory too, who will change themselves to the bulldozers. I really admire that crowd. I've seen some films.
Oh, it's called Tar Sands Blockade. Yeah, they're some amazingly dedicated people.
Yeah, Cherie locked herself onto the gates there. I was like, sweetie, you got as long a record starting up here. You've got as long a record as I've got a file at the White House comment line. I mean, they've got a book on me, especially this last week. But it's amazing that there, because Texas has become a real hotspot for a lot of activism, because there is, of course, so much of the oil business is focused down there, and ports, this is where the equipment is, isn't it, Julia, to get it onto boats and stuff.
The refineries are there, and I think what some people don't know, here's another part of the education, those refineries that have ramped up to be able to have these crackers to be able to process this heavy oil, they're in tax-free zones. Okay, so these industries have been given some abatements, and there's some recent news that in Nicaragua has entered into an agreement with a Chinese businessman to build a new canal, so that whatever products China might want to get to China can go through Nicaragua and not the Suez Canal.
Oh wow!
That's because the Suez isn't wide enough, isn't it correct? That those boats are too wide.
I don't know. It's just interesting that I thought the Suez was going to be enhanced in some way, but there's a brand new canal being built by a Chinese business person. So that just kind of start connecting those dots. The Chinese are investing in the oil sands. The Chinese are investing in the boats. The Chinese want this product over there. And I think what some people don't understand, again, this is our pushback, that this is not a pipeline. It's just coming across Texas. It's not helping Texas. No Texas oil can get into this pipeline. It has to go to Oklahoma because there's no on-ramps in Texas. And that was part of our pushback on, is it really for the public good here in Texas? Well, Texas oil can only get in it if we ship the oil outside of Texas to Oklahoma. And then it's like a tollway with one place you can get on and one place you can get off. That's not very user-friendly.
Go ahead, Gwen. I'm sorry.
Well, you know what's so crazy, too, about this? I don't know if anyone's aware, but the world's largest manufacturer of solar energy products is China right now. Did you know that? And they're working also on wind farming, too, so building the equipment to purchase, to put your own wind farms together. They're building it. They're in China. We are not. They are. There's some.
Well, and that's part of when people take shots at those of us that are fighting this pipeline, they say, don't you drive a car that probably runs on, a petroleum product? I'm like, well, I do. The next car that I can afford will be one that doesn't. So what we're saying is, instead of investing all these billions of dollars in a pipeline that just to extract this product from Canada and Alberta is just unbelievably invasive to the boreal forest, let's invest some of those monies in something that's not a buggy whip business. The petroleum business is a buggy whip business, and we're continuing to exploit the land and invest billions. Let's channel $1 billion off. But, of course, the oil companies, they're like Kodak, They know they got to exploit everything. I'm not saying that Kodak exploited things, but when your industry is based on a dying source, they're going to get the money while they can. Everybody is so short-sighted in some of these investment strategies. And that's why Bill McKibben's 350.org organization and their program to have universities and corporations divest themselves of fossil fuels, that's another way to make a difference here.
I agree.
You're quite right.
A great website, by the way.
Yes, very good.
So basically, your fight right now turns to the Supreme Court, yes?
The state Supreme Court, yes. We're in the state system, because that's where, we're fighting the land being condemned, and that started off in our county, and then it went to the appeals court. But after the state Supreme Court, that's as high as we can go. We're hopeful that they will hear our case. We'll appeal, but the Supreme Court has the option to just say, we're not going to hear your case. I'm hoping they won't do that, because even the appellate judges wrote in their decision that our case and the Crawford spokesperson, which I guess they mean me, have received substantial attention. And you know what? Here is another basketball analogy that my brother and I have. Even though the odds are against us and we're down 30 points in the fourth quarter, we're not going to fold. You know, you don't forfeit the game when it's not over yet, because stranger things can happen. And to further the basketball analogy, there are people still coming into the stadium to watch this game, even though we're still behind. More people are starting to follow what's going on. And if each one of those people tells one other person, that opens one other set of eyes. And they may call their congressman, or they may run for a political office and say, I want to represent the people now. So there's some momentum, and that's what's hard for me to – I'm having to recalibrate winning and losing. And winning is making some sort of forward progress. And no matter what happens in the court system, I believe that the Crawford family, by taking the stand, is helping push the ball down the field, you know, in another way.
I hear you. That is a good analogy, because you really are. That bringing up not just awareness, but allowing people to understand that there's more at stake than just going home and, you know, putting your paycheck in the bank, going home and cooking dinner and enjoying a few outings with it. Our world has changed, and there's responsibility that everybody has to the community now. We have to put some light on that.
Absolutely.
Even if it's just knowing what the truth is out there, it doesn't mean everybody needs to be the activist, but it's being a 21st century citizen on planet Earth is no longer you can't get by dumbed down. You can't ignore things. You can't be, you know, filled with mind candy. Unfortunately, folks just want to come home if they've still got a job and sit in front of the television and be blinded by all of what they're so afraid of going on around them.
Your example is going to get some of these people off the couch, because I think sometimes it just takes somebody to start, and one person stands up, then another. And, you know, and just from hearing you talk, it's just it's inspiring. So, I mean, you know.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, a lot of people just have to be given permission, you know, and by seeing you do something, it gives them permission to stand up and, you know, do something. It doesn't have to even be the pipeline. It just push back.
That's
push
true.
Back. Like you say,
the
you
phrase
never,
now is lean in, you know, lean in. I totally, and, you know, I was helped to stand up, you know, by some people who said, we heard about your fight, let's do a press conference, you know, and the press conference then got a little bit of attention, and then, you know, one reporter called, and the story that really kind of broke it was the New York Times story, and that's kind of where we kind of went into the major leagues. It was still just one little family, but the awareness, just this little things, like when they trot out these incredible numbers, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of jobs. One element of those job numbers is an individual who, his name is Mr. Perryman, and he puts out the Perryman Report. And part of his methodology is counting jobs like manicurists and dancers and choreographers. And I don't think we're talking about the ballet. So when people talk about these jobs, those are the things that are being added in there. Okay, are those, you know... It's just, you know, if people really want to read a great report that kind of strips away all the hype, the Cornell University did a study, and I forgot the name of it probably 2 years ago, but it's on the real job numbers. And they came to the same conclusion that President Obama talked about the other day. It's really not a lot of jobs, and when the pipeline, once it's constructed, there are some very, those are maintenance kind of jobs. But you know what? The jobs that are being created right now are cleanup jobs. Look at what happened in Kalamazoo. Look what I went. I drove to Mayflower, Arkansas. It's about 5 hours from here, because that's the same product being transported by a different Canadian company. Actually, that was by Exxon. But when I saw the level, I was there a week after the spill happened, and the brown line on the bridges where that oil had been, it's the same oil. I can't imagine seeing that in my creek. I just can't imagine seeing that in my creek.
See what they used to clean it? I mean, did you see what their procedure was at all or anything?
Well, I did. I mean, I was 50 feet away from the cleanup crew at the subway. A week later, they were using high-pressure hoses to force it down the creek to the water, to the lake. And they were just pushing it down. This is after they used the paper towels or whatever the unbelievably crazy thing is there.
By the way, that's the Global Labor Institute. That was the Cornell University report, and you can get that online. Just Google ILR, and it should pop up there. And they say that there will be more jobs lost than created, period.
Really? Okay.
Oh, dear. That's an oh dear, really.
Well, and not only, also the thought is that this will not reduce gas prices. It may drive them up. That's part of what also that's being said is there's a glut of this product in Cushing, and we got to get it somewhere.
Well, that's because they're going to be making diesel fuel, and then the refineries have to be refitted to make the diesel fuel, and they won't be making gasoline. Actually, right now the U.S. exports gasoline. But pretty soon it'll be just, they cannot make gasoline out of that sludge. The only thing that they can make a profit off is diesel fuel and some of the byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
China uses more diesel fuel than gasoline on average. It's different than this country where everything was built on gas. But they're going to get all of the kerosene and diesel fuel, and where the refinery was making gasoline, it'll stop making gasoline, make the diesel fuel, and that's why your gas prices will be higher.
And the incredible paradox of this whole system of flow here is that all of this crude bitumen oil, not crude, this bitumen oil that's only good enough for diesel fuel going to China and chugging the machines in China that are building solar energy to sell back a one-on-one to the Western world. It's so crazy, crazy, crazy.
Well, you've got to really work to connect all those dots. You just saying it then probably, I hadn't really thought that whole thing through myself. So, it's like supplying arms to the bad guys.
Exactly.
And the thing is that it's giving all of these Chinese jobs, but they don't get paid the same way Americans do. And gosh knows, plenty of America's feeling like Chinese. They're getting paid like the Chinese now. But the point is that all of these jobs that green industry could provide and the good help that will come from it. It's astounding. It's just astounding. It really is. It's a blemish. And we're searching for our morality here, aren't we? Jeez.
Well, it is. That's probably a good way to put it. It's hard to believe that granted, Americans should be proud, but Texans, we're really proud. I mean, don't mess with Texas as a phrase, that in a state like Texas, landowner rights and Joe Everyman, Joe Farmer, Joe Landowner can't get their day in court because the courts say we need to go to the legislature, and the legislature said there's nothing wrong with the laws. So if I were and I'm not throwing any threats out there, but I'm starting to find out who the friendlies are and who the ones that aren't in our legislature. And we're going to start holding public hearings, because you know what, guys? The first responders in these communities, our firefighters, our EMTs, these guys that were there to be a spill in Paris, Texas here, they're not being told exactly what's in this pipeline because these companies are saying it's proprietary.
Yeah.
So we're sending firefighters and first responders in when they don't know what they're fighting. So we're going to start holding hearings in these communities and trying to provide that information. And if the state representative in that community chooses not to come, I bet we're going to have a chair on that stage with that person's name on a little card and basically saying, your representative didn't care enough to come to learn about this product
and
what's going to do their communities.
You could, the first responders can get, they're the ones that get all the poison.
You want to know something even worse? We, the first responders in some of these communities like Kalamazoo have gag orders, and they can't even talk about what they learned in fighting those fights, those spills.
How can that be? Oh, my God. Now, that's way too much power.
That was what went on down in the Gulf also.
Oh, yes, I know.
Well, you talk about the power. When the spill happened in Mayflower, Arkansas, Exxon made sure the FAA had a no-fly zone over the town.
Yeah,
I think 2 days. No-fly zone. So no one could take pictures. That's the power that these oil companies have.
You know, we're sitting here, we're talking about pipelines. There's a huge pipeline proposed, has been for the last 2 years, in the Middle East that'll be putting a major amount of crude oil through a certain country. Do you know what country that is?
Afghanistan to Russia, right?
Syria.
Syria. Oh, really? Not surprised.
Yeah. That's the thing that's going over the Twitters and the Twitterers and the Eastern European stuff that's coming out. And now finally getting some video from journalists in Syria, and they're talking about this pipeline thing and wondering what kind of an influence it's having on the American government. And I'm like, oh boy.
Julia, I know you mentioned it earlier in the show, but could you mention again just like what are the next steps you're going to be taking? And if people want to contact you or get more involved, how can they?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the next step is we are putting together our appeal to take it to the Texas Supreme Court. So that's kind of the paperwork part of it. And if I will be keeping people up to date on what's happening and how I'm feeling and what's going on through my blog and our website at standtallwithjulia.com. And if anybody wants to contact me, there's two or three different emails on there, or if they want to, send a donation or just send me an Attagirl card. I need emotional lifts a lot of time as much as I need the pennies and the nickels, because there are days I think I can't do this anymore. But then there's a lot of people that I'm standing up for, and that's a very motivating thing.
And you have a couple of nice photos on your website too.
Oh, well, thanks. That's why my horse is in there, too, and the dogs.
Well, but it shows
what the price. Where can they go directly to donate to you on Stand?
Well, there's a donate. There's a donate button on Stand Tall with Julia. Actually, you can donate through PayPal, or if someone just wants to send me a check, it's Crawford Defense Fund, P.O. Box 155, Sumner, Texas 75486. They can just send it directly to my P.O. box.
Wonderful.
Even just a card that says "Keep it up," and "Give 'em hell" has become kind of our rally cry unofficially. So a card that says "Give 'em hell" gets put in my folder.
Are you on Facebook?
Yeah,
I am. Julia Trigg. I've got one with Julia Trigg Crawford, and then I think someone else is working one that's Stand with Julia. It's crazy. They can look up Julia Trigg Crawford, and we'll make sure that I got stuff there.
Great.
I posted on there a couple of times.
That's right. Thanks, Gwen.
Coming up to this show. We're at the end of the show. I want to give a personal thank you to you, Julia, for all the work you're doing. And the best of luck, but also anything we can do on this end to support you, all you have to do is drop us a line, you know.
I will do that. I'll call on you when I need another boost, and hopefully one of these days we'll be getting out some good news on a fight. Who knows?
Well, you can get a hold of me all the time, Joe, at worldwidehippies.com. I'd like to keep up on this, and it's really been nice talking to you because I've been reading.
Oh, Joe, it's been great to meet you, and Gwen, good to talk to you again, and thanks for giving me another forum to kind of provide some enlightenment.
Keep up the howl. Okay.
Thank you much.
Always. Joe, thank you for being with me today and taking this one. I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
I hope I did all right.
You did great.
Well, thank you. Hey, it was fun. And educational. It's nice to hear right from the person's mouth. It makes a big difference than just reading the slants on it. By the way, you still there, Julia?
I'm still here, Joe.
I had a email sent to me on an alert under your name, and it said that you had already filed for the appeal, and you're saying you haven't filed yet, correct?
Well, then they've talked to my attorney since I have. I think there's a whole series of things you have to do to say you're going to appeal. So in the last week, she may have put a place marker on, but I don't think we've actually filed the appeal yet.
Well, see, I would rather hear it from you because it's mainstream news, so I won't mention it.
Okay. Well, I may be a day behind, but I haven't talked to my attorney in a couple of days. But we are going to appeal.
Beautiful.
That's the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Julia, so much once again with you and supporting you.
Thanks, Gwen. Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's our show for this evening. Sunday's the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters. I want to thank Joe McAvoy and Worldwide Hippies. Citizens Journalist Exchange. Is that correct, Joe?
That's correct.
Hey.
Check us online every day.
And I hope you'll come back and do it with us again.
Well, it was fun. Anytime, really. It was fun.
Okay, great. All right. And our best to Jack Jodell. I think he's back in another 2 weeks. So that's our show for tonight, folks. That's all she wrote.